Raising women's voices, one story at a time. Welcome to the She Said Project Podcast. Friends and fans, you are listening to the She Said Project podcast. This is Jeanette Jerzyk, National Director of the She Said Project, here back in the WILL studio in Champaign, Illinois. My co-host, my gorgeous, amazing, talented, beautiful, sensational co-host, Carrie Rosso.
Thank you. I am not above sucking up. I like it. I like it. And so now I'm going to suck up. I'm so excited because we have Julie Price.
I know. This is a big episode for us because Julie appeared on stage, and that's what she said, in February 2022, which was our first show, live show back in our flagship town, our flagship show of Champaign-Urbana after the two-year hiatus due to COVID. Julie is here in the studio, ready to chat with us. But before we introduce her, like, having Julie on stage was a big deal because she's a local celebrity in Champaign-Urbana. She is the head of the CU Public Health Department. And it's no secret that in the past 2 years during the COVID pandemic, she was A, extremely busy, so we were lucky to have her, B, extremely visible because she had a lot of work to do and a lot of things to say to keep our community safe, and C, we presented her with a challenge when we had her on stage at That's What She Said.
We weren't just picking on Julie. We always have a rule that if you are known in the community, you cannot talk about what you're known for. So taking all of that away from Julie for what she had been spending 2 years talking about, I hope that she welcomed that challenge, but she knocked it out of the park when she did, and I think took all of us by surprise.
Well, let's find out what she thought. Please welcome to the She Said Project podcast, Julie Pride. Hi, Julie.
Hello. And trust me, I was absolutely ecstatic to talk about anything other than COVID for a while. I'm also known for chlamydia, but that's a completely different thing. But not that I have it, just that I have to frequently talk about it in public as well.
Chlamydia and COVID, good times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is one interesting career that you have there. But you are known in this community. You are seen in public spheres quite often. And so it was no surprise to see you stand on a stage with a microphone in your hand. But when we welcomed you on stage in February of 2022, after 2 years of dealing with all of this, our community got to see another side of Julie Pride. They got to see the woman behind the title, the woman behind the title, mm-hmm. the person that you have always been and that makes you so unique and interesting. And can we just say funny? Can we just say hilarious?
Yes. So another rule that we have is I often say no F-bombs in the show. And I can usually predict who's going to be the person that is the hardest to rein in with the F-bombs. Angie Franklin, hello. That was a no-brainer. But I did not foresee, one, that you were going to be so funny. I think all your friends and loved ones saw it coming, but everyone else.
Oh, trust me, my family does not find me funny. And they made it very clear.
What?
Nor my teachers, nor my parents. I mean, they just never, no one ever. And I said, well, indeed I am. I've been tested. I am actually funny. My children, it irritates them to death that, you know, because I'm always saying, well, they're always like, you're not funny. I'm like, well, actually I am.
And we got to prove it. There were 800 people in that audience.
Proof.
We have proof that you were funny. So let's just cut to the proof right now because our listeners need to get to know Julie Pride. And I don't want to give away any of the funny moments, Monkey, about the story, Monkey. So we're just going to have to play it and then we'll talk about it. So let's take a listen to Julie Pride live on stage in That's What She Said, Champaign-Urbana 2022 with her story after school special.
Y'all miss hearing me talk, don't you? If you're as old as me, you probably watched the ABC after-school specials. Remember those?
They would pop up at unexpected times to interrupt our afternoon viewing of syndicated sitcoms with overdramatic cautionary tales for tweens and teens. Well, I hated those. I hated those because my life was basically a bunch of after-school specials. Oh, yeah, I had it all. Illness, death, substance abuse, homosexuality. And growing up in a very, very small town meant that my window on the world was not based on experience, but it was based on World Book encyclopedias that were in my basement. They were my generation's Google. So I grew up in a small rural town in central Illinois, and it was about as boring and homogeneous as could be. Everyone, and I mean everyone in my community, was pretty much the same. We were all white, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant, boring. Catholicism was actually considered quite exotic. And lasagna, well, that was an ethnic food. Despite our obvious similarities that I had with everyone, I always felt different. I always felt odd. And like most kids in my town, I grew up feral. You know, we woke up, we ate breakfast, we went outside, we played, we had adventures. We would really only come in to eat and sleep. We often drank out of garden hoses and peed behind bushes and trees so that we didn't have to come in and interrupt our play. My friends and I shared everything. We shared snacks and comic books and secrets and really bad case of ringworm that we got from a feral cat that I found in the country and brought into town. We had to make our own adventures. We didn't have the video games and all the festive things y'all have on TV and internet. We had to make our own adventures. So one of mine involved the forbidden spider monkey. This was kept on a long leash in my grandparents' neighbor's backyard. And every single time we went to my grandparents' house, we were told not to bother the monkey, not to go near the monkey, and God forbid, do not touch the monkey. Needless to say, every single fiber of my being was drawn to that monkey. It really was the most interesting thing in my life up to that point. I often fantasized about that monkey, owning that monkey, dressing it up in little outfits, putting it on my shoulder in the bike basket and riding around town with it. I'm still thinking about that monkey. God, it was cute. Any hoodle, I finally did touch that monkey. When my grandparents were inside their house, I took my sister's bike and I rode over and I got real close to the monkey. Well, that monkey was mean. It just jumped out and it snatched the plastic flower off my sister's bike. So thinking quickly, like I do, I grabbed hold of that monkey and I yanked that flower right out of its mouth. That monkey grabbed me and it bit me right on the middle finger. I can still see the scar. That little adventure really cost me. It cost me a smack on the ass and a trip to the doctor's office for a tetanus shot. Stupid ass monkey. Okay, so to set the stage, I was a tomboy. That's what we were called. But not only was I a tomboy, but I was an unusually small, anxious, and sickly child, no doubt due to the near-fatal bout of measles I had as a toddler. And while all of my siblings grew to 6 feet tall, by high school, I was only 5'3" and had delayed puberty. That made me seem even weirder. They tried to treat me for my runtiness by things like daily iron medicine, which was so strong that I swear to God I can still taste it sometimes. My doctor told my parents, an interesting little way to help me gain weight, they told them to give me a small glass of wine before dinner. Now, the point of the half a juice glass full of wine was supposed to stimulate my appetite and help me gain weight. Yes. While I don't remember if that actually helped me gain weight or eat more, I do absolutely remember the calm feeling that it gave me. I was still in grade school. One transformative memory that stays with me is the time that my parents inexplicably took me to see Cabaret at the Clintonia Theater. I was 7 years old. Apparently, they couldn't get a babysitter because that show dealt with some pretty adult themes, and they went right over my head. But I still remember it like it was yesterday. As the lights went down, I sat between my parents, taking it all in. The smell of the popcorn, the cardboard, the seats, the cigarette smoke, and the red velvet seats that I couldn't stop touching. And then the screen flickered to life. And there she was, my first crush, Liza Minnelli. I told you I was a weird kid. After the movie, I could not stop talking about Liza. How pretty she was, what a great singer she was, what a great dancer she was, how I just wanted to go back and see that movie again. In fact, I talked about it so much that my mom finally sat me down for a little talk. She explained that while she was glad that I liked Liza Minnelli and the movie, I was not going back to see it again. And in fact, she thought it probably was a good idea that I started talking about other things. And while I wasn't exactly in trouble, I did get the sense that this fixation was somehow unacceptable. When I was only 6 years old, my mom had to go to the hospital. It was obvious to me that something serious was happening, but I didn't know what. When she finally returned from the hospital, she had a huge bandage across her chest. And while she assured me that it didn't hurt and that she was okay, I could get the sense that that wasn't true. Later, I saw that the bandage had actually covered where her left breast had been, and that it covered a horrific scar that went all the way across her chest, under her arm, and clear through her back. After that, there were about 5 years of hushed conversations, endless trips to doctor's offices and to the clinic for radiation treatments, and many, many more hospitalizations. During this time, my mom would sit me down to share life lessons. One that I really remember, because I was super excited about it, was the period talk. Before she started the period talk, she sent me to the bathroom to collect a box of maxi pads. Woohoo! I had been banned from those maxi pads and anywhere near that cabinet in the bathroom, all because I used a couple of them to make saddles for the cats. Whatever. There were a lot of them in that box. That's all I'm going to say. Anyway, remember when I said I was a late bloomer? By the time I actually started puberty, maxi pads had changed a lot. They had evolved and sprouted wings. So when I was in sixth grade, just 6 days after my mom's 40th birthday, my sister and I were called to the principal's office, where one of my aunts awaited. She didn't tell us what was wrong, but I knew. When I arrived home, my father sat us down, confirmed my worst fears, and my childhood imploded. So to reiterate, at the point I lost my mother, I was age 11, in sixth grade. I was a small, sickly, flat-chested tomboy who was fighting anxiety, depression, developing alcoholism, and had homosexual tendencies. And did I mention that my really small school had no social workers or counselors? But fast forward. That crush on Liza Minnelli never really went away. And I was starting to think that maybe I actually had caught the gay. Later, when I was 17, I would sneak down to the library at Millikan University and secretly read up on homosexuality to see if that's actually what I had. But I was assured by my reading that this could actually be a normal phase of adolescence, and I would outgrow it. Spoiler alert, I didn't. So at about the time, I also discovered that when I had trouble sleeping due to my anxiety, that alcohol could actually help with that. It could help me feel better. It was like wrapping myself in a warm blanket. I would seek it out in any form I could find it. An open bottle of wine, Vicks 44 cough syrup, NyQuil. That warm feeling was really comforting. Later, predictably, that feeling of comfort would turn into the nightmare of addiction. But on December 1st, 1991, I took my last drink of alcohol as I entered Carl's New Choice Center for Alcoholism. Calm down, I still use all the other drugs. No, I don't. I'm kidding. Am I? No. A little bit. My after-school life, like all of those on TV, did have a pretty happy ending. I'm not going to pretend that there haven't been rough times, many struggles, many setbacks as I navigated my way towards adulthood. There still are. There will be many more. But tonight, I stand before you as a sober, out-and-proud lesbian, mother of three smart, caring, beautiful children that I am so proud of, and a professional with a job that I absolutely love. Who am I kidding? I loved it. When the credits finally roll on my story, there will be a long list of people who were responsible for how it turned out. Family, friends, colleagues, teachers, professors, and others who were just supportive and let me know it was okay if I was weird. These were not professional counselors. These were just caring adults. They just let me know that no matter how awkward or weird or alone I felt, it was okay. So as we go through our daily lives, we may not all know what ABC's after-school specials others are currently living through or who have lived through. We do, all of us, however, have the power to be the one that can help them find their happy ending.
Julie? Julie, I don't even know what to say.
I do. Stupid ass monkey.
Indeed it was.
Now, you shared with me recently that you've learned a little bit about the fate of that monkey since your performance.
Okay, so this is so freakishly odd that it never occurred to me. I had always wondered, and I always asked, like, what? I wonder whatever happened to that monkey? Like, it just disappeared. Whatever happened to the monkey? Well, I was talking to my older brother, and, you know, he said, well, I can tell you who owned the monkey, and I can tell you about that. He said, but I don't know what happened to it. It just disappeared. You're right. So then I'm just going about my business, and my niece texted me, and she said, hey, why did you only have to get tetanus shots? Why didn't you have to get a rabies shot? And then I said, oh, my God. Because being a public health professional, I now know exactly what happened to that monkey. It was no doubt confiscated by the Macon County Health Department, had its head removed, shipped to Springfield to the lab where they had to test it for rabies because that's what they did. Otherwise, of course, I would have had to get rabies shots.
Oh, the story just took a turn.
It took an ugly turn. And I was just like, oh my God, I killed that monkey.
You're a monkey killer,
Julie. I know. I didn't like the monkey. I wanted the monkey. I coveted the monkey. But then I hated the monkey, mostly because I got my butt smacked, which hurt actually more than the monkey bite. But now I realize, talk about a bizarre twist. My niece had to point it like, what happened to that monkey? And then it was like, oh, hey. Having worked in public health for 30 years, you never really thought that one through.
It never occurred to you.
It absolutely never occurred to me. I knew I had to get tetanus shots. And to make matters even weirder is my brother was bitten by a raccoon, which he caught, because why wouldn't we be catching wild animals every chance we got in our small town? And he was bit by it, and he let it loose. And then he had to get 21 rabies shots in his stomach. And I went with him to the nurse's house where he got them throughout that summer. So, yeah, that never occurred to me why I never got them.
Wait, you just went to some woman's house that said she was a nurse and sprawled out on the dining room table and...
Well, yes.
This is taking another turn.
The plot thickens.
Okay, so in a small town, you know, we have a doctor's office that was about the size of my bathroom now. And clearly, the man did not keep up on current literature, as most of the people in my town roughly...
They didn't all have the World Book Encyclopedia
clearly
set that
not,
you had?
Because okay. I kept up on it. But I did wonder at one point why I had these gray teeth, and all my friends had gray teeth, and everybody around us had gray teeth. Well, hello, tetracycline, that the rest of the world probably kept up with their literature and knew not to prescribe that, but nope. Not in our tiny town. So you have the good and the bad in the small towns. So the rabies shots were prescribed. They're usually prescribed by the health department. But apparently back in the 70s, you could just go right to the nurse's house. She probably just pulled it right out of her fridge with the, you know, milk and eggs and everything else that was in there. Gave him the shots.
Swing by Bertha's and get yourself a belly shot.
By. Yeah, her name was Pat. But
there's a couple more after-school specials in here somewhere.
Yeah, it's just weird. But since I did that story... Now, I don't know who, you know, I know people from local saw it, but one of my friends that I grew up with, she posted it on Facebook and her Facebook page, and then a lot of people from my hometown was commenting on the monkey, and they're just like, oh, I remember that monkey. I didn't know you got bit by it. And it's like, eh.
It's apparently a phenomenon in your
it
small
was
town.
That, well, I mean, seriously, a monkey in a small town, that was like a circus, a tiny, tiny circus, but a circus nonetheless. We had very little to entertain ourselves with.
Okay, so that's your hometown feedback. What has been the feedback that you've gotten? Any weird feedback? Any funny feedback?
The feedback I got, including from my children, is basically, why are you so weird? They knew all my monkey stories, all my weird stories, but the serious stuff about my mom and about the alcohol and things like that, I have never really talked about it. They're like, of course you would get up on a stage and like tell the world before you just mention that. I'm like, well, I never really came up, you know, that just doesn't come up in a daily conversation, I guess, with my kids or other people.
Unless you're having coffee with me, in which case we talked about everything.
Well, yeah, you were like a therapist. You were supposed to be pulling things out. So kind of hanging out with you is like incomplete therapy. So, you know, I'll probably just be floating around out there half cocked.
Well, if you would pay the bill I sent you, we could finish the session. I don't know.
Exactly. You just pick the scabs and let them bleed. Now,
way to go.
Those were not, I mean, obviously some of them were painful memories, but they're memories and they're long since passed. But it's just something apparently I had never bothered to discuss with certain people. I mean, some people knew them.
Well, it's not every day you're asked, you know, to share your deepest and darkest secrets in a very public way. And you
oh,
know,
girl, that is not anywhere near my deepest and darkest secrets. Trust me.
That's why we've called you here today, Julie.
Well, today's the day.
But this is the wrong station for that. It's going to be a blue album.
But we trudged through a lot of the bits and bobbles from mm-hmm. your past and, you know, handpicked what was going to be a good fit for the show. And you did go to a darker side. But what you have such a gift in doing is sharing some of the darkness from your childhood in such a charming and funny way that brings people in, because laughter connects people. It gives people permission to live in those ugly moments and not shy away from it. And you just have such a gift. Every moment, every phrase, every anyhoodle made people love you even more. And there was just this awe on people's faces watching you share these stories of your past. That is a true gem. That is a true gift that you have. And I know that you bring that into your work and into your public speeches quite a bit.
What I try to do, and the reason why I put some of that stuff in there, was to let people know that, you know, people only know you how they know you. So most people know me from being on the TV for, you know, 5 minutes or something, giving a presentation somewhere. And so I think that sometimes you just believe people are who they are. They just like magically popped up like a mushroom, you know, from, this is me, I'm fully formed, I'm a mushroom. But, you know, I was a wild kid. I was a hellion at some point. I suffered great pain when I lost my mother, of course. I had great fun. All of that becomes part of you. And I think that for me, some things like the being out about being a lesbian, about struggling with that, about struggling with addiction, about struggling with anxiety and depression, to me, that's important for other people to know, because when you're going through it, you would swear you're the number one, you're the only person in the world going through that, and that there may not be something good on the other side. And in reality, most often there is. And so I think that those of us who have gone through that and survived that, I almost feel like we have a moral obligation to let other people know, hey, I had some rough times as a kid and made it through. And especially, you know, with being gay, I didn't talk about that a lot, but that was a really, really, I really struggled with that because I didn't understand it. I'm older than most people think I am. For whatever reason, people don't realize I am a boomer. And so, I mean, I was really, it was just completely different. And being a, you know, non-athletic lesbian neophyte in a little town, you know, nobody assume that. So I like wasn't fitting the stereotype at the time, even though I was a tomboy, you know, there were a ton of tomboys. But once she started getting older, it was like, you know, it was rough. And I didn't know what to do with that. And I didn't know who to talk to about it. And how I handle everything is to read. So, you know, the reading actually made it worse for me because you have to realize this was in the very early 80s. I was like 17. And I would go to the library at Millikan, and I was so terrified that somebody would see me touching a gay book or in the gay section, you know, that I would go to the card catalog, and it was ridiculous. It was like, you know, I was on some kind of secret spy mission, and I would get it, I would go find a book, I would grab it, I would go to a different floor of the library, read it inside of another book. And these books were, you know, good Lord, they were like almost traumatizing, because I would look at the pictures and be like, okay, number one, I don't look like that. Number two, I'm not attracted to that. Oh my God, what am I? And these were from, you can imagine that the books were from like the, well, either early 70s or late 60s. It was just really weird. I expected Croft puppets to pop out and tell me how to be gay. Da, 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 you know, I was used to, where was H.R. Puffin stuff when I needed them? You know, pop out. Tell me where the rainbows are, you know, where's the happiness? And so looking at those books were not helpful. And then I later discovered that you could order books online. And I will tell you, my therapist wasn't particularly helpful either. I will tell you, I started working in advertising at 19, and my boss just said one day, you're going to therapy, I'm taking you. And she just took me because I was a mess. I was just a mess. You know, my therapist was very helpful. I was trying to quit drinking. And she's like, well, in Europe, you know, they just try to control their drinking. Sweet. I'll try that. That didn't work.
And control it all the way down.
I did. It didn't work. And the same thing with here's what my real issue. She immediately knew that, okay, you're struggling, obviously, with your sexuality. And then I'm like, okay, well, fix it. What do I do? And it's like, I need to meet people. And she was like, well, I'm not your dating service. I'm like, oh, well, okay. I'm not asking for a dating service. But, and so long story short, She eventually figured out that she could send me to Champaign from Decatur, and McKinley Church and Foundation had a group, and that was it. That was helpful. So being around other people, even though I felt completely different than all of them, I was younger, they were in college over here, and they seemed far more worldly than me.
But all of that, all of those experiences, all of those struggles is what you brought to the stage and shared the other side of. So that, yes, in today's age, hopefully a 17-year-old sexually confused young person has so many more resources where they can find answers and camaraderie and therapy and whatever it is they need to find themselves. But you got to be part of that. You got to be part of that dialogue and help the next and help the next. Can we just take a moment and talk about Liza?
Mm-hmm.
Because I loved your revelation about.
I almost fell out of my chair when you did that.
And you know, mind you, she was not her best at the Oscars. She was not her best.
She was not her sexiest.
No, but she was not. But
yeah.
But thankfully, Lady Gaga stepped in and was the true champion that I would expect her to be.
Yep. That was a
women supporting women. That's she said is all about. But you know what? Liza's had an amazing life and an amazing career and has been a, I don't know if role model is the right word, but has been someone, a touchstone for people like you to be inspired. And it's the theatrics, it's the drama, it's the talent. You know, it was
her struggles with addiction.
Yes.
You know, I kept reading about her any chance I got, and I read about her struggles with addiction. And actually, when I was in the treatment center, you know how you get the blue book, the big book, you know, what I did was cut the pictures of Liza out of Vanity Fair and stick them all inside my book. And they're still in there. I still have it. So they're all plastered in there. The one with her with the, you know, spiky hair and the cigarette. But she, you know, she struggled with addiction. Her mother struggled with addiction.
I don't think one She Said show and one podcast episode is enough to really enjoy all that Julie Pride has to offer.
This is part one.
I know. There's definitely a 2.0 and a 3.0. Like, I see it in the future. I want more. I know that our fans want more. Julie, thank you first and foremost for saying yes to being in That's What She Said. Many people don't know that we asked you to be part of this in early 2020 when the pandemic was just this little baby problem on the horizon. And you're like, yeah, it'll be fine by the time the show comes around and the world went upside down and back again. Mm-hmm. And by the time we were ready to go. And every single time you showed up, you were prepared, you were excited, you were supportive of the other women who were in the show, and you were just a joy to work with every single step of the way. And thank you for coming into the studio and joining us today to share even more of the story behind the story, as we do. My favorite line, when you're like I do. I think I walk around saying that to my husband, like I do. I mean, you've given us such wonderful quotable quotes, but...
Well, if you ever have a podcast for That's Why She Can't Shut Up, that'll be me. Bring me back for that, because I'm a talker.
You heard it here first, ladies and friends, when we...
Big announcements.
When we launch the next podcast.
Why can't she shut up?
Why can't she
Episode 57.
I need more.
Except Julie's will be, why can't she shut the bleep up?
Probably.
It's so great. Well, thank you for letting us live through that joyous moment again. It gives me such joy and laughter and cheer. You're just a gem. You're a gem and you're a treasure to this community. So we thank you so much for joining us today.
I am so happy to have been a part of it. It was wonderful and I love meeting everyone and it was a wonderful experience and I like keeping in contact with people.
So. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today for this hilarious, fun journey with Julie Pride here on the She Said Project podcast. Over and out. Thank you for listening to the She Said Project podcast in partnership with Illinois Public Media. All materials contained in the podcast are the exclusive property of the She Said Project and That's What She Said LLC. For more information on our live shows, go to shesaidproject.com. This podcast was made possible with support from Carl and Health Alliance and presented by Sterling Wealth Management, empowering women to live their best lives.